been considered a construction
real estate effort.
Do you know if they actually bulldozed the house yet?
Yeah, it's gone.
Okay. Because there was dirt piled up on the driveway, and he was telling me that earlier there was dirt on the road itself, too.
Well, it could be. See, that portion of the road's closed now since New 19 opened up. That really doesn't serve any purpose there anymore.
So it would have been probably just associated with other work in the area.
The dirt on the road?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. The gas company has a little bit of facility up in there. That road's open. Can't you get up in there?
Yeah, we got up
the
one
today.
Road.
We did today. Earlier, there had been a pile of dirt blocking the Crooked Run Road.
Okay. Got
and then it was moved
right
when they were taken out. Now the pile of dirt is blocking their old driveway.
Okay.
And Mr. Reed here said, well, maybe it has to do with trying to discourage vandalism, or I guess the ranger said that. And we were wondering what kind of vandalism they could be thinking about if the house is gone.
You're
there's
not
no house there. It's gone.
Unless they're actually trying to protect
when was
some
it,
of the trees.
When was it bulldozed? Yeah.
I could tell you. I mean, I could probably look and find out, but I don't honestly know.
Mm-hmm. Do you know about people living up beyond, at the very end of Crooked Run?
Hicks lives up there, but he's not. I think he's moved out. Down there with J.C. Hicks.
There's still cows up there. Just
well, I think, I'm just a guess, and I'd say he's moved out, but he still left his cattle there, but that's real estate's function. I really don't know.
Yeah, something like grazing, they'd probably allow it to go on for a while until there's actually need to do some work in the area.
Well, that raises a question. You know, what kinds of uses is the Corps ready to allow until they're actually going to be flooding or they're actually going to...
Well, it depends on the area. I mean, I say there is hunting going on. That's one of the jobs the ranger has, getting out the permits. Now, we've had to close off some areas that people are used to using because of the construction activity. And, you know, primarily you're looking at three things to determine whether or not you can leave an area open for public access. One is an area subject to vandalism because of, you know, old buildings still on the site. Two, is it a safety problem because of construction going on in the area? And three, is it an area where you can't control the activity and therefore, you know, people might go in and do crazy things like cut down timber? And, you know, if it's too isolated and remote from where you're located to really control it, given your current resources, it'll just sort of close off access to that area. But we are allowing hunting, and I guess there's fishing up here too, right? And the one thing we're not allowing at this point is camping, because we just don't have, you know, ranger personnel to control that. Yeah. Bill and his folks are not responsible for worrying about campers. They're responsible for seeing to it the construction stays on schedule and is done properly with all the requirements that we place on our contractors, which are extensive, besides just labor and all this other stuff that we've been talking about. What's the time frame they're not allowed to work in the river?
15 April, 1 July.
And that's a requirement we worked out with the state to meet state water quality certification and sediment control plans for the contractors. They're not allowed to work in the river because of the fishery and sediment.
That's during a fish spawning season. That's a DNR.
We reached that agreement. You maybe noticed some of the ponds around the area while we were driving, too. There are settlement ponds that contractors are required to put in the areas where they're working to catch runoff sediment. There's even a proposal, and I don't know if it's been under final action yet or not, from, of all people, our chief counsel, to leave some of those sediment ponds in place as duck habitat or geese habitat, you know, sort of an attractor. To bring them into the area, give them an area to rest for a while, besides the reservoir itself. Probably too much activity during the season in the reservoir for them to really flock to that. But, I say I don't know if anyone's acted on that proposal yet or not.
We had some questions on cost sharing that we wanted to...
Okay, most of that I can get out of the book. You left some stuff over here in this office. With that.
Yeah, maybe. Let's see.
Benefits and costs.
Yeah.
And that's figured and everything. I remember you said we were on the interstate at that point.
We can talk about that in a couple of minutes, too. I'm just trying to think if there's anything else that we need to get from Bill.
What was your feeling about the way the Hefner case was handled? Did you know about how it was handled, or did you have any feeling about it, or did you know her? Or?
I knew who she was, and that's about it. But you know, that's kind of a real estate function. They're responsible for that end of it, and we've got our own problems and responsibilities, and we kind of take care of them, and they kind of take care of their end of it.
Bill's got enough to worry about. He probably didn't even really know.
I knew it was happening.
The time that it was going to happen until it did happen. Yeah.
How does it look to you in retrospect, though, about the way it was handled? Did you have any feeling about it, or reflections about it?
I think maybe I could have stepped in a little earlier, let people know what was going on. I'm not sure real estate people would have liked that, because it probably would have attracted too much attention right up front. And when I say too much attention, I'm talking about attention among people who have been very vocal and outgoing in their opposition to the project, who would be there really not to help Mrs. Hefner any more than us, but really for their own personal interest in stopping the project. Yeah. Despite what they say about, this is so bad, we should have been there to help her. Most of the people we've heard from are people I don't think really would have been there with her best interests in mind. I think the only other thing we might have done, and I don't know if it was doable because I don't know where they are or whether they were even interested, would have been to talk to a couple of her relatives and have them go along with the marshal. But the basic point is that there is very little we can do when it gets to the point that it's in the judge's hands. Yeah, he makes the decision whether an eviction is necessary, and he decides who it is that's got to do the eviction, whether he's going to turn it over to the sheriff or turn it over to U.S. Marshal. And at that point, we start making enemies with the judge if we start interfering too much.
But doesn't it come to the judge's attention because you petitioned the judge?
Well, yeah, if the people do not move. I mean, understand, we own that property for about 3 years, and we have asked and asked and asked and talked to her lawyer and to her and her son, and they just would not listen. And it gets to a point where eventually, we can't really talk about it anymore. We need to get to that property to continue the work. Or
what specifically is to be done with that piece of property that required her removal at this particular time?
I'm not sure. What's in that particular area?
Do you know?
No, sir.
I don't know if that's part of
the. Is it
how
water,
much of that's going to be?
Water
is going to go up that high?
Is the water going to go up there?
I really don't know.
No.
It's outside the lake area then?
Well, there won't be any water on it. It's above the pool. Mm-hmm. Like a crooked run, yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. It's above the pool.
So it was in the. Her actual property is in that, what's called the recreation area?
Right.
Probably would be part of the Roanoke Recreation Area, I suspect.
And when is that due to open?
Oh, well, it won't open for some time, but we've already awarded the first architect and engineer contract for that area for the design of the maintenance complex. So construction up in that area would be starting possibly as early as next construction season, but I'm not sure if we have money even in the budget for it next construction season.
Hopefully it'll start this coming summer up in that area.
Mm-hmm. So, the point being then that the construction starting up in that area, any property that we own up there, we would want to get the residents out as soon as possible, simply to avoid complications with construction, for their own safety. Mm-hmm. Now, it's conceivable that Mrs. Hefner's eviction could have been postponed a few more months. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure in the long run what that would have accomplished. The problem was not the fact that she needed more time. It was not a situation where, we just bought the property last month, we need it next month, we're coming in tomorrow with a U.S. Marshal. Hey, please, that's not enough time for us to relocate. We haven't got a house yet. Can you give us more time? I sit back and say, we're not starting construction until next month. We'll wait for a while. Give you time to relocate. It's not that kind of a problem. The problem was we'd owned the property for almost 3 years, and she was absolutely refusing to talk to us. About the only communication we could get was through her attorney. Mm-hmm. So there was no likelihood of her moving voluntarily, is what it amounts to, any time.
During that three-year period, Congressman Bob Wise was successful in getting the project funds stopped in the House of Representatives, and it may have looked to the people in the community as though the situation was going to reverse itself.
For a short period, but I mean, if you paid any attention to what was going on, it became obvious quickly that that wasn't going to happen. Yeah, got taken care of in the Senate. And then, you know, Bob Wise himself, and I don't know if it was the Weston paper or the Clarksburg paper, but, you know, he talked to one of the local papers and he said, hey, you know, this was my best shot. I tried it this year. I'm not going after the budget again. And he came out and said that was it. That was his one of try. And, I mean, that should have been obvious there from his statement at that time that, you know, barring some unforeseen circumstance, and at this point, the only unforeseen circumstance I can see would be finding something equivalent to King Tut's tomb hidden somewhere within the project area, you know, this, you're at the point of no return.
Or maybe a snail darter.
Well, I think after the experience they had with the snail darter before and the discoveries they made afterwards about the other locations where they found it, the same snail darter, that I think they would think twice about even the snail darter. Although I understand they are actively considering a new list of endangered species. But I think with the Tennessee experience, there would be a lot of second thoughts even on an endangered species find on totally stopping a project. They might ask us to delay while they investigate possibility of relocation or alternative sites for habitat for, you know, something like that. But I'm not sure they would consider actually outright stopping it. The other thing you have to consider too is, and this figures in a little bit in discussion on cost-benefit ratio, you know, is that all of these traditional arguments that, you know, sometimes have caused problems for federal projects in other parts of the country have been used on Stonewall to no avail. You know, we've been in court ever since the project started on one lawsuit or another for one reason or another, including the fact that, you know, benefit cost ratio is all screwy, and the thing doesn't stand up except when you factor in recreation, and that shouldn't be a purpose. Water quality is not an authorized purpose for a core project. Why are you listing that? Why, you know, all this other business. And the courts have said, hey, wait a minute, you know, there's no grounds here for a suit. Well, not no grounds for a suit, but there's no grounds here to stop the project. And after they go through fact discovery for a while, they decide, well, there's really no basis here for continuing the case and throw it out. Environmental impact statement was found to be acceptable. The one suit remaining is probably on the verge of being settled out of court.
What is that?
That is the national level. National Wildlife Federation and, you know, I don't know how many other organizations, including the Upper West Fork Association, involved in the lawsuit. And, you know, part of the problem, I think, with the legal challenges to this project, and most of them have been based on challenges to the way the Corps does business across the country. There's nothing wrong with the Stonewall study or the Stonewall report. We did everything by the book, and the project stands. And even if you took recreation out, you would have a project, although I think anybody in Pittsburgh would concede that it would probably be slightly different. I don't think the dam would be anywhere else. I don't think the pool would be any different, but you might have a little less acreage in terms of total acreage.
2,000 or 3,000 acres less, you thought.
Yeah, maybe more than that. I don't know. But you would still have a project. The question is, you know, does the way the Corps do business nationally the right way to do business? Now, obviously, people have attacked that across the country. In some cases, they've been successful in specific projects, but it's been two weaknesses in that particular project. As I was mentioning later, you know, the way we do business is the way basically we're told to do business. Now, it's not like the folks at the chief's office in D.C. meet in the traditional political cigar-filled room and decide this is how we're going to handle that project, this is how we're going to handle that project. A whole set of regulations and guidelines. Some of them are federal regulations. Some of them are engineering guidelines accepted by professional engineering societies and organizations. And Congress is aware of all of this. Now, some congressmen may not know that much about it, you know, as far as personal knowledge of what this means, but they have staffs that work for them. Now, and they know how we do business. They know how the formulas are calculated. They may not understand them completely. But over the long run, they've accepted them as a valid way of doing business, and they keep authorizing projects. And as far as whether or not core projects are pork barrel, I think that's a political problem, a political decision. Yeah, the core turns down more projects than it recommends to Congress in terms of our own internal proceedings. Yeah. Things that we're asked to look at and we're saying, well, no, can't really justify it. This solution won't work, and it's the only one that's economically feasible. This solution's too expensive. So more things are turned down within House before they ever get to Congress than Congress ever authorizes. And Congress doesn't necessarily always go along with the Corps. You know, sometimes they have not authorized projects we've recommended. There's a process, too, where after 7 years where they do authorize a project but never get around to the appropriation process, decide they don't have enough money to fund it. You know, we are mandated to go forward with a report to Congress asking for deauthorization of that project, so it just doesn't stay on a shelf somewhere forever, which is another misconception. People keep thinking we pull these things off the shelf. They've been sitting around for years. Well, we have some reports that have been sitting around for years that we look at again when we're asked to, because we've never gotten an authorized project out of the original report. But if a project is authorized and not funded for 7 years, we are mandated to go back to Congress with a report on that project asking for deauthorization or explaining why it should be kept and considered for appropriation at a later date. You know, some projects, it may be a case where, you know, other interests that need to provide some of the funding were unable to provide the funding originally, and now it looks like maybe they will. You know, like the state is going to pay part of the recreation costs for a particular project, or the local community has finally come up with the rights of way and access necessary for a local protection project, that sort of thing.
So in the case of this project, it had been on the shelf for 7 years. It was.
Let's just see if we might as well let Mr. Whitaker go. Yeah. I guess we don't have any more specific questions, but you're just losing your time here.
just tell us when we're in the way of your party over here.
No problem. We just had lunch together. That's going to be for tomorrow.
Oh, all right.
Oh, that's tomorrow.
Yeah, what you say.
Okay. What time do we need to get out of?
Somebody will be around here 6 o'clock or so.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
We can't go much longer ourselves.
Okay. I think they left a couple things in your office, though, too. So.
Okay. No problem. Glad to
thank you.
I can go get the.
Okay. Yeah.
It's your briefcase.
And may be getting back to you later. Because he's talking about doing a book eventually.
Hey, so you said that.
I thought he'd been around here a little longer than 77, so we may be looking for somebody else.
So you said that this request for this project was resurrected by the community?
Resurrect is probably the wrong word. You know, we did some early studies in the 30s and nothing much came out of them. And then, you know, we were asked to come back and do a thorough study. I'm not sure how far back that went, really. 70s are when we got the construction money. Finally, you know, went forward with a report and said, hey, this is what it looks like, this is what we recommend, and Congress gave us an appropriation. So in 77, we came in and started acquiring real estate.
It was authorized in 66.
Right.
But it had once before been authorized.
I don't think.
It was called the Brownsville Dam, right, at one point.
Brownsville was one of the original considerations. I don't think that was ever an authorized project. I think that was a study.
The title of the study was Brownsville Dam. Okay. Right. By the time 66.
And I think that's where some of the confusion came out about the stability of the dam too. You know, there's been some nonsense about that, about you know, a bad foundation. Well, that was one of the original sites that was looked at, and that's why that site was dismissed. You know, there's nothing.
Where was that?
I think it was upriver somewhere. From current location. You know, there's nothing wrong with the stability of the place we're working in. Which reminds me, that's the other question for Bill. The explanation of concrete gravity dam.
Oh, right, yeah. The whole technique and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Have to come back to him. All right, so it was authorized in 66. Then 7 years would have made it 73, where he hadn't begun any actual acquisition or anything by then. So you must have had to go back in that period, right around 72, right? Something done in Congress? As a matter of fact, I think in 72 was when Jennings Randolph grandfathered in the old water quality standards to get around the new Clean Water or the Water Quality Act of 72 or something like that. That's
I don't think it's a Water Quality Act. That you're probably talking about the water quality benefits for the project.
Maybe, and pollution control and how you calculate that.
Right, okay. Well, I'll talk to you a little bit about that too. I'm trying to remember exactly what transpired in that area, in that era. I'll have to look that up and retrace the project history a little bit there. But 77 was when we got the money. Now, there are two water quality issues at stake here with this project. The one water quality issue that you're involved with any project these days, is state water quality certification, which under current laws, even the federal government, any agency of the federal government, is required to get state water quality certification before it initiates a project. And we needed it for Stonewall. We have it. That was another area where they challenged the procedure the state went through in granting us the water quality certification. And the court decided, well, yeah, it wasn't mishandled, but it wasn't handled strictly to the letter of the law. You ought to redo it. So they went back and redid it. It was not a question of stopping the project. It was a question of going through that process again. As a part of that process, you have sediment control plans that you're supposed to provide the state. And that's what I was talking about before with sedimentation ponds and the period of time that contractors are not allowed to work in the river. Okay, so we've met those requirements. We've worked with the state in that regard. In fact, our people have heard comments from some of the fish people from the state and this sort of thing that, you know, prior to actual construction of the dam itself, the water quality in this area was better than it had been in a long time, even though we were working on road relocations and everything. Now, I don't know. I don't think that's a result of the road relocation, but it certainly indicates that, you know, the requirements we've placed on the contractor are sufficient to, you know, prevent any deterioration of water quality. Okay, the other water quality issue, and the one that I think probably Randolph got involved with, is the fact that water quality is an authorized purpose for the project and part of the benefits attributed to the project. Now here, basically, it's a disagreement with EPA, and I'm not sure if they still hold fast to this attitude now or not. But at the point that we were talking about project authorization in the 70s, or project purposes in the 70s, the feeling of EPA was that the best way to deal with water pollution was with point source discharge. In other words, you go to the source of the pollution and you treat it there, which means you put it on the factories to take care of their discharges, and the cities and the county governments, and, you know, this sort of thing. Which is fine when you can identify that sort of a source. But the argument, and it's not just with Stonewall, but the core argument in terms of water quality benefits from a major reservoir anywhere in the country, is that there are certain areas where you cannot really identify a single source like that, where you can treat the pollution at the source. And that's particularly true if you're dealing with something like the acid mine drainage. And you talk to the Bureau of Mines and all the other folks that are involved in reclamation projects, and they'll tell you that the sort of things they're doing with reclamation and with treatment at source are, you know, only going to get a part of the problem. It's not really going to solve the country's big problem with acid mine drainage. So what we're saying in the case of Stonewall is that the sources of pollution that we're dealing with are so diffused that while some of them may be susceptible to the EPA approach, not all of them will be, and that there will be a sufficient amount of improved water quality provided by the dilution of pollution through releases from the reservoir, that it does add to the benefits of the project.
How do you calculate times to do that, and how does that go along with flood control on the whole system of rivers there?
Well, basically, you're talking about adding additional cubic feet per second of water to the river when it's reached certain levels, basically low levels, or at certain seasons when you have exceptionally high runoff and a lot of pollution is entering the river. And the determination is basically made by monitoring the quality of the river. and we do it, and we take readings from the state people that do it, and all of that. I'm not really qualified to give you a complete detailed explanation,
yeah, well,
but that's essentially
not qualified to ask the best questions on it. But I do. It just seems like here again is potential conflict. You've got to maintain a certain pool in order to be able to dilute.
Right.
At that time, but you also have to maintain the pool.
Well, yeah, they calculate that into the operation of the project when they're figuring out the overall benefit-cost ratio, you know, as best they can. Now, they're not going to be able to preconceive every possible conflict, but they, you know, should be able to determine that, you know, at certain times of the year when we're maintaining such and such a level in the reservoir and maintaining such and such a discharge, we would also be providing this sort of a benefit in terms of the reduction of pollution that would normally occur during that time of the year, because of your normal runoff from abandoned mines or something of that sort.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's a very generalized explanation.
One of the things you can do with this much water, if you've got it,
right,
you can dilute pollution, you can raise the level at the old locks in order to make navigation possible,
right,
and
you can supply water to people who need it. Yes.
What, incidentally, is the cost going to be to the city of Weston for?
I don't think that's actually been determined yet. I think that's going to be based pretty much on what they finally decide they want in terms of storage, in terms of cubic feet, and whether or not it's going to be a constant supply or whether it's going to be a reserve supply. And most of the contracts we have in our district for water supply at our other reservoirs, and there are only a few of them really at this point where we actually have existing contracts, are basically for reserve supplies. You know, the city has a regular water supply from some other source, but in anticipating future needs, possible droughts, and, you know, other situations where they might exhaust their resources or come so close to exhausting their resources that they need emergency supply available, they'll enter into a contract with us to maintain a certain amount of cubic feet in our reservoir as their water. And when they need it, they can come and get it, and they pay for it. I'm not sure if they pay a flat rate plus, you know, cost of actually supplying the water when they need it, or how the formula is determined. But that's how most of them work. Now, it is conceivable that, you know, there may be a community where, you know, they're going to look at one of these reservoirs as maybe being their major source, and we're going to be supplying it on a constant basis. Now, in terms of figuring out the needs for the project, in terms of pool levels and reservoir size and everything, contacts were made with local water companies and communities and this sort of thing to get some general idea of their anticipated needs and whether they would be looking for a primary source or a backup source. And I'm not absolutely positive, but I think in the case of Stonewall, it's pretty much, you know, a reserve supply type of situation. And that need was factored into, you know, our requirements in terms of pool size. Again, you know, to your question, how do you figure that out? You know, you got conflicting interests. Well, you try and anticipate as much as possible, which is one of the reasons why it takes us so bloody long to plan these projects in the first place. You know, and that could have been the reason why it took 66 to 77 to get construction money. It may have taken that long to go through the complete planning cycle once the project was authorized to come back with a final plan saying, hey, this is what we're really talking about, and this is what it's really going to cost, and this is what we need next year to start it, type of things. You have to talk to everybody and their cousin. You have to anticipate all the potential needs. You have to determine, you know, what you can realistically do to meet the needs of the people in the local area. There are probably some agricultural needs around here for water, or industrial needs for water, that we probably couldn't meet with the project. Either that's not an authorized purpose for the Corps to pursue with one of their projects, or it's something that, you know, we can't really meet with this project because of where we have to locate it for the primary needs, like flood control and this sort of thing.
On the cost side, you got your basic cost of construction, all that. But as far as what was here before, you basically figure that out as an appraisal of acreage and buildings and
Right.
That's where.
And business income, if it is really an income-producing property. Now, you know, a lot of these tracts in this area really did not produce substantial income. Mm-hmm. Some did.
But a self-sufficient community is essentially has no value. You can calculate other than.
Well,
what you were going to put.
You know, that is a difficult question, and you know, defining just how self-sufficient it was too. I mean,
the question that haunts me, you know, brought down to a keener focus, is how Barbara and Bobby Hebner were independent people, independently functioning people. They had a little business there. They didn't have a lot of income from it, but it kept them going. I think she had a little veterans pension check, mm-hmm. not very much, but a little bit every month. But they lived in a community where they could get along, and they were not dependent. They were not burdens on society.
Right.
What haunts me now is that they may well become dependent people. They moved into a place, I understand, where there's no land for their nursery. They weren't able to purchase anything that was comparable with the 30 acres that they had been removed from. And probably the only hope for him, for the boy, he's a man, he's 23 years old, lay in some kind of small agricultural pursuit. He was very good in FFA. He was awarded prizes and recognition of all kinds. He could conceivably have functioned in an independent way.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks to me now as though he will become, as a result of being removed, he will become a dependent person. When you multiply that by the number of situations involved in this project and other projects like it. I'm just trying to figure out how you assess how something like that can
be
assessed.
In the first place, I don't think you can really multiply the Hebner situation, because I think that is fairly unique in that you're talking, one, about an older woman who probably, unless she is a lot more independent than most even what we would consider independent women of her age, probably does not have much opportunity to restart a career or business, regardless of what she was able to purchase in terms of property. And a son who, as you've indicated, has some problems, besides just the relocation problems and the job problems. And you don't face that situation with most of the relocations. Most of the relocations involve people who are able to reestablish their lives, whether they really want to initially or not. To get into a new business or get together with relatives and expand the other family farm somewhere else, that one of the cousins or other relatives has, or is at the point where, I can't do this anymore, but I got pension check coming to me anyway, so this is my opportunity to retire.
Barbara lost her pension check as a result of all of this. So
I,
she doesn't even have that income now.
I don't know. If I were you, I'd double check on that.
Yeah,
I fail to see how she could have lost the pension check as
a
result of this.
The VA and the Corps don't really work together.
Right.
The VA says you've now got a lump sum for your farm. Therefore, that's money. We were giving you your husband's pension check, the veteran's thing, based on the fact that you didn't have any other income.
Okay. Well, understand I'm not speaking for the Corps right now, but my personal opinion on that is hooey.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know what VA requirements are on pension checks. How much rights a widow has to a pension check in perpetuity. But all she was compensated for was the property that the federal government required from her for an authorized federal project. And I don't see how in any way that should affect her other benefits from the government that she's entitled to. And if I were her lawyer, I'd challenge that. And if I were one of her friends or her relatives, I'd write my congressman and I'd write my senator. I would think that's even something Jennings Randolph, the supporter of the project that he is, would probably want to question. And that's certainly something, again, now speaking for the Corps, that I'm sure the Corps, none of our agents were aware of at the time, you know, the eviction took place or, you know, in any of this process, or had any influence on one way or the other. And that's a different agency taking separate action. And I, you know, again, speaking for myself, I frankly don't understand their action. Okay, but you know, as to your original question, you know, it's, I can understand what you're saying, but you know, in the process of dealing with a project like this, you know, how do you go about sitting down and evaluating that kind of really fairly unique situation? Yeah. If duplicated at all, it will be duplicated in one or two instances among 1,000 people.
Well, we've heard of quite a number of deaths which have been attributed to this project as a result of older people who have not been able to face leaving homes which have been in their family for generations, have not been able to face up to starting over. We've heard of cases like that where people have been relocated and have died a short time later. But it's been a heartbreaking proposition for older people.
I haven't heard of that. I can understand where it would be traumatic, particularly for some older people, but I suspect that, again, we're talking about an exaggeration of what may have been one or two instances.
We've heard a figure, now this you may regard this as an exaggeration too, but we've heard a figure that over half of the people in the area were over 65 years old. I mean, this is an older community in years.
I don't know. I don't know if anyone has done an age profile in the community. And I'm not sure who ever brought that figure up, you know, what they're basing that on, except maybe personal knowledge. Of course, a close-knit community, you know, that might be sufficient. But again, you know, when you're talking about this community, you have to remember, too, that, you know, really Weston is a part of this community that we're talking about. And you've got Brownsville and Roanoke, but you know, obviously Brownsville was so small, school was closed by the county or whoever before the project ever came about, you know, simply because they weren't able to support it. You know, most of the truly functioning farms, you know, were functioning in relationship to Weston. You know, the rural communities you're talking about were largely residences, a church, and maybe a store. But they were not, I think, at the point of time we're talking about, with Corps coming in and starting to acquire real estate, really all that self-sufficient any longer, other than the individual homesteads themselves, you know, where they were able to raise most of what they needed and sell.
Could it be seen that they had, in a sense, lost their right to exist as a rural
community? No,
because
I don't
they
think,
were not productive,
you know,
any longer.
No, they didn't lose their right to exist.
I think how we're evaluating as our appetite for land increases and land uses.
All I'm saying is that, you know, that at least portions of the community were being assimilated into a little larger community in terms of, you know, they were building up relations with Weston. You know, they still existed as a community, and they certainly still had a right to exist as a community. But, you know, along came the project, and, you know, unfortunately, they were in the area that was needed for the project.
But it was the people in Weston who were consulted about that need and who raised the question. It wasn't the people on the Upper West Fork and Skin Creek and Brownsville and Vandalia. It wasn't.
Well, I don't think you can make that kind of a generalization. I'm sure a lot of the people in the project area were involved in terms of some of the initial contacts. Now, I'm not sure how far back we had any public meetings, but it's not like you go to one or two people in the biggest city near an area and decide on that basis what you're going to do. We would have come into the area, and in terms of conducting our study, we would have talked to a lot of people in Weston and throughout the area, basically gathering data on what they'd experienced in terms of floods and this sort of thing. And like I say, this project goes back so far, I'm not sure what kind of public meetings they had way back when. I know they had a truly disastrous real estate meeting where they did not do a very good job of explaining the real estate process.
In Weston?
I'm not sure where that was located. I know.
Did you read minutes of that, or how do you know it was disastrous?
Simply from talking to the people that were involved. That was a mistake of the times. And I don't know that any one particular individual was at fault, or whether the core or the opposition or the supporters or who was at fault. I think it was just, like I say, a mistake of the times.
What
were in an uproar, and we just didn't do a very good job of explaining the real estate process.
Was that corrected later? Was that in subsequent meetings? Were those?
I think with most people, those misperceptions have been alleviated. Primarily through personal contact. Our real estate people generally go out and try and sit down face to face with people and talk to them about the process and what they're going to be doing and how they're going to evaluate the house and property and this sort of thing. It's been a little difficult in some areas here because some of the opposition has been so vocal among some of the people. But the other thing you've got to remember too is the Upper West Fork does not represent all the people who are in the project take area. Now, I can't give you specific names without doing a little research on it, but we had people in the area that came to us and said, "Hey, come evaluate my property. I want to sell and get out of here." And others who were very passive about it didn't seem to express themselves much one way or the other. And
that reminds me of something we were starting to talk about before we ever went up, when we were first talking about the series of acquisitions and how acquisition goes along year by year, simultaneous with other things that are going
right.
on. Was there any advantage in talking to people who had smaller pieces of property first and acquiring those relatively cheaper parcels earlier on?
No. The decision on the parcels was based on construction needs. What are you going to do when? How soon do you expect to be able to get a contract out to relocate this road out here? And the question comes back, well, how soon can you get us the real estate for it? And that's constant discussion there. Well, we need to award this contract next spring. Well, we're having some tough negotiations here. We won't be able to get you all the parcels until the following spring. Well, that's not good enough. Well, it's going to have to be. And they go back and forth and finally decide on a schedule, acceptable schedule. There's no truth to the rumor that we took the easiest things first or the smallest parcels first or any of this other stuff. The acquisition was based on basically construction needs. And where possible, requests. Like I say, people who said they wanted to sell. If we had a willing seller, we would go ahead and deal with them as soon as we could. Mostly in fairness to them. If they were willing to sell, there was no point in delaying.
So people like the Aspinalls, who are way up at the head of Skin Creek, have a large farm there. Are you familiar with that at all? They're right near Vandalia.
Yeah, okay.
And have not even officially been condemned yet, as far as their understanding goes. certainly haven't settled in their court.
Mm-hmm. Have they? Do you know if they've been approached at all yet?
Yes, they have been
okay.
approached. Somebody has talked to them.
I suspect it would be a while before they'd be condemned unless they've absolutely refused to talk and thrown the folks out the door. Yeah, negotiation is our first choice.
But
they are at the end of the process because that's the end of the project. Now, if you look at where the dam is located and where they're located, that's going to be the last area that's going to be filled with water. And as I mentioned earlier, you start at the dam and you work on out through the project, acquiring what you need for specific project purposes, construction, time that it's going to be filled with water and this sort of thing. Yeah, the last thing you want is the thing that's up the creek at the area where you're going to see an inch rise in water. But you still need it in order to control the overall project. And like I say, there'll be a few variations in that. You know, if you get a willing seller, or if you have a unique situation where you've got to relocate a gas well or like the Skin Creek compressor station from point A to point B, even though they're dislocated by several miles, and you're going out and you're buying some isolated parcels, and you'll fill in the gap later when you need the area in between later.
Mm-hmm. I guess you've already answered the question about the Hebners. What specific construction or need applies to their land that meant that there was due?
Well, without going into detailed analysis of all the plans and everything, I couldn't really say that specific track, what exactly is going there. But I assume that part of that's going to be part of the Vandalia or Roanoke Recreation Area. Get myself confused here. But again, my point there was that the question was not, at this point, the immediate need. I mean, we're at the point now where every last parcel is something that we're going to need within the very near future. I mean, we'll be starting the recreation construction next construction season. There'll be a lot of activity throughout the project. As soon as we can acquire what few parcels are left, we really need them. Unless there's a very compelling argument on the part of the owner that they need a certain amount of time to relocate. And that's part of the